Regional Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile, and I have a quite a fine group of talented fellas in the studio today. They are all members of the band The Revelers, who are new yet not new. We have Bouncin' Glenfields over there on the left.
Hey, Cheryl.
We've got Blake Miller, Eric Fry, Daniel Kulik, and Chaz Justice.
Yeah.
How you guys doing? It's good to have you here today.
Great.
I mean, this is the whole band, huh? I mean, that's pretty good to get a whole group together like this.
We're missing our saxophone player.
Who's playing sax with you?
Chris Miller, actually.
The Chris Miller.
He's
a young friend of ours from North Florida who we met in New York, actually. Mm-hmm. Do we meet him at camp?
Probably.
Yeah, at something nerdy like band camp or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was actually playing dobro.
How did, now have any of you played in bands before consistently with a sax player or a horn player?
I was in a band a million years ago that would have horn players. One or two guys that were pretty consistent, but it was weird. It was like flute and trumpet.
Ah.
I was in a little thing called marching band.
Yeah.
Oh, there they go. Well, I was in sixth grade band, and I played the saxophone, so yes.
No, you yourself played the sax.
Well, when I was in sixth grade, sure. I can play Little Brown Jug.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know, and we laugh, however, it is those marching bands and bands in school that gives a lot of people their start. So.
Amen.
What was your first instrument, Eric?
My first instrument was actually the bass.
It was.
But I started playing the clarinet when I was in seventh grade in band. Yeah.
Bass acoustic, or you do
right,
a stand-up?
Bass.
You were?
Yeah, my dad's a bass player, so.
Ah.
Yep.
And what kind of stuff did he do?
He's a bluegrass bass player, so that was my first foray. I just learned how to play two notes, and I could play in the jams with him. And that was fun, and you know, but going on to the band thing, I started playing clarinet in seventh grade and played all the way through college and everything. So.
Did you choose clarinet, or was that a?
Sort of.
You know, sometimes there's leftover instruments,
exactly,
or that there's not enough people.
That's exactly when my parents knew somebody whose kid had already graduated, and they had an old clarinet.
Huh.
It was either that or tuba, and I couldn't bring the tuba home on the bus. So.
Okay. But you stuck through it through college.
I did. I ended up playing contralto clarinet, which was great because nobody else did. And so I was kind of a focused instrumentalist in that.
Do you still have one?
No. Well, I still have an old clarinet, but it needs a lot of work. I haven't played in a while.
Yeah. Well, so did you ever play in a band? I don't really know much about your history with that. Did you play in a band with your dad?
Tell us more, Eric.
Yeah.
Sort of. I guess you could call it a band. It was mainly a group of guys that would get together and jam on Saturdays.
Which is a big bluegrass thing.
In Alabama, where I'm from.
Yeah.
Big day.
And every once in a while, they'd get a call to go play like a family reunion somewhere or some kind of community event. I don't think they ever made any money. A little band called White's Mountain Bluegrass Band. Tommy White was leader. So my dad would just play acoustic rhythm guitar, and I would play the bass. And you know, when you're young, it's a cute thing. People just they don't even know if you're any good, but there's a kid on stage, so
that's right.
You know, you're automatically popular.
Plus, Eric was already like 5'6" when he was 10 years old, so it helped.
How tall are you now?
I don't know.
Still
growing. You're over 6.
I'm at least 2 meters.
You're at least 2 meters. All right. You know, Glenn, we're going to go back to you
yes.
in a sec. All right. So you played sax as a kid.
Yeah, just a little bit.
When did drums come into your life?
I was 16 years old, as most drummers are when they start playing drums. And I had a friend who...
That's the age.
Yeah, it's the age.
It's you heard it here.
Otherwise known as the age of self-exploration. My parents... Okay, I had a friend who... his name was Jason Kiefer, and his dad would buy him any musical instrument that he wanted in the world. So... Jason had this really cool drum set. I went over there and just like sat down behind the drums and immediately started playing Led Zeppelin songs. Like I'd been playing drums, you know, forever.
Yeah.
It just felt really natural and it was easy. And since I've never done anything hard in my entire life, I just stuck with it. So anyway, he wanted to buy, and this was a long time ago, this was back in the days when you could buy, he wanted to buy a 1969 Les Paul for $400.
Wow.
Yeah. And
now this is in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, this is in Baton Rouge where I grew up. So it was 19, very funny, Blake. Blake just said it was 1970. I'm not that old.
But I am, so
yeah,
watch
well,
it,
I'm,
Blake.
Yeah, really, Blake. he wanted to sell me this drum set, and I happened to have $400 saved up, and I asked my parents if I could buy a drum set, and they said, absolutely not. So I gave Jason the $400, and the next day I had a drum set and set it up in my room, and to my parents' horror, began playing pretty much 24 hours a day. Then they said I could only play the drums when they weren't home. But the good thing was is that I had an hour every day after I got home from school till my mom got home. So an hour a day is a lot of playing.
I didn't realize
that when I was a kid, but I just couldn't stop. You know,
yeah.
I became obsessed with it. So.
So did you play in rock bands when you were younger?
No. Well, yeah, but we never... me and my friends in high school had a band, and it took us 5 years to learn 10 songs because we all three of us were so obsessive that we had to learn them note for note for note for note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Since then, I've given up on that type of... that way of learning music. I feel like I'm in some ways not as good as I was when I was a kid, you know. But yeah,
because some of the obsession has
it's gone away a little bit. Yeah.
Wow. But, well, you're still getting gigs, so that says
right. So something's got to be working okay, I guess.
Yeah. All right, Blake, grab the mic over by you.
Blake Miller. Turn.
Eat it. You got to get right up on it, Mill.
All right. So you started your first musical instrument.
It was an accordion.
Yep. Now, you and I were talking the first time I met you. You were, I think, still in high school,
Probably middle school, actually.
Really? Yeah, this was quite a few years.
Yeah.
Well, this would have been 5, 7 and a half, 8 and a half. This, yeah, maybe 9 years ago or so, 10 years ago.
Yeah, so early high school.
Yeah, you're young. And that's the first time I ever met you and saw you, and that was in Ville Platte, and that was for a Folk Roots event.
Mm-hmm.
And you were already... playing the accordion pretty decent then, but you were, yeah. How did you start playing?
Well, my grandfather was an accordion builder. His name's Larry Miller from Iota.
Yeah.
And so everywhere you looked, there was an accordion somewhere. And as a kid, you just pick up things that are around and mess with them. So. With a lot of accordion.
And you liked the music as a kid you were that age,
biggest hero was when I was 4 years old, my biggest heroes were Wayne Toups and Boozoo Shakers.
Ah, okay.
And people would ask me if I wanted to be like Boozoo when I grew up, and I said, no, I'm going to be Boozoo when I grew up.
I'm going to... There you go.
Still working on that. But.
Yeah. I mean, you play how many instruments now?
Four.
So we're talking fiddle, accordion, bass. All right.
Maybe you ought to stick with three.
Which one do we want to get rid of, Chaz?
Maybe it's five, actually.
Yeah. Huh.
Yep.
Now, you graduated from here, from UL.
I did, last spring.
Did you graduate in music?
I did not. I graduated in French.
Oh, in French studies you did. Okay. Yep. Did you grow up speaking the language?
I grew up around it, for sure. And you just learn small things here and there, and when I actually got serious about learning how to speak French and talking with my grandpa and stuff about learning how to speak French, I was really surprised at how much I already knew that I didn't realize that I knew.
Yeah, that it just...
People who were like, you know, I can understand it a little bit, but I can't speak it. You know, they just kind of grew up around it. You know, people don't realize how much they really know
the
language until they are forced to
make a sentence, to hammer out a sentence, you know?
That's right, that's right. We're going to pass the mic over to Daniel. Pull that mic over there, Daniel. Daniel Kulik.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Daniel, you started life where?
Started life where? I grew up in Atlanta. I was born.
You did?
Yeah, all my family's from Georgia and South Georgia.
Okay. And what was your first instrument?
I played snare drum in fifth grade band.
Ah, see, so you're another band guy.
For about 3 months.
And then what?
I think I had a guitar maybe when I was 13 or so, and then sort of put it down and didn't really pick it up again. And then when I was 15, I got a mandolin, and that was sort of my main instrument till I was 22-ish age.
So it was mandolin was the main one.
Okay. Yeah, to much of
because you play
chagrin.
How many instruments?
I don't know.
Like a lot.
That's a good
it's just too many to count.
I know.
I don't know.
It's, I mean, actually, I ran into
so
a
talented.
He's so humble.
Well, I ran into an old. Sometimes, man, I ran my friend Jermaine Prejean. I ran into him Sunday, and he was talking to somebody, and this guy looked at me, and he goes, oh, what do you play? And I looked at Jay, and I was like, I don't know what to say. And he was like, I got to tell everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like they're sort of weird tools that I feel like sometimes you just get a gig or you get a call just because you're willing to figure something out.
Yeah.
So I've been, I'm willing to figure out small parts on instruments, I guess.
Yeah.
Whether or not you can translate that into, you know, novels is a whole nother story.
Do they all feel comfortable to you?
Some definitely.
Have they all felt?
Instruments with a pick feel very comfortable.
Okay.
Like guitar, mandolin. Banjo's pretty easy. I mean, that's pretty comfortable. I mean, although I don't use picks, but the fiddle's definitely.
Keep going. No, you're doing good.
Go, Daniel.
Talking
go
is not
Daniel.
One of his instruments.
Not really one of the tools.
I had a stuttering problem when I was a kid, you know.
Ah, well, you've done well.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, the fiddle, I mean, it's funny in this band, and since I moved to Louisiana, I've started somehow getting gigs as a fiddle player, and yet it's like the most strange instrument, in my opinion.
Sure, yeah.
It's just using a bow, it's different, you know, and you have sustain and you have to kind of work. It's like a more of a voice thing, and I'm a, yeah, terrible singer.
Have you taken lessons in your life? Were you, or did you all self-taught?
I showed him everything he knows.
All right, that was Blake Miller. Very good.
I had I had one mandolin lesson or two. I went to Nashville when I was 18 and took a lesson from this guy, Mike Compton.
Okay.
Who used to play, he still plays with the Nashville Bluegrass Band. He played with John Hartford for a number of years. And
so
you
moved there when
no,
you
No, I just went
you
up
just
for
went.
A visit
okay.
and just hung out with him for an afternoon. And I remember I sat down and I said, well, he goes, what do you want to learn? And I said, I don't know. I want to play like you. And he goes, well, just sit down and play.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've sort of taken that to heart and just, you know, surprised I have left the house as much as I have.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I thought about that before we were coming in here today about how many different, and I haven't even known you all that long, but how many different instruments, you know, that I've seen you playing on that you're not a guy who you would peg, like. And I mean, no offense, Glenn, but I haven't seen you play sax. But yeah, but you know, some people you just know as playing a certain instrument. You, I never, you know.
Well, it's I appreciate it, and it's slightly a mirage.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of mirages, Chaz.
A riddle wrapped in an enigma.
He's here in real. If people out there don't know Chaz Justice or haven't ever seen him play, you need to go see him play because I've never seen someone attack a guitar the way he does and make it sound so good.
Because I'm angry at my father.
Yeah, I mean you really. What did you say?
Yes.
But you really. That's something
I see. So you can fix that, right?
Yeah. but you do. You know, sometimes when it's fun to watch how you are attacking that guitar. Was that your first instrument or no?
That was my first instrument. I didn't get serious about it until I was like a teenager. But my mom played in old-time sessions and
now,
whatnot.
Now, are you a Baton Rouge guy?
I'm originally from Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Oh, from Vicksburg. Okay.
And then, yeah, and when I lived there, they used to have a thing called Pickens. And my mom used to play old-time music and sing and stuff. And she told me sometimes that I could either strum the guitar or go make her a drink. So I learned how to make a gin and tonic really well, and I learned how to strum some guitar.
Yeah.
And then, then I moved to Memphis, and my brother was a bartender on Beale
how
Street
old were
in
you?
Memphis.
Like out of high school?
Like 12.
Oh.
When I lived there.
Okay.
And then, so when I was a teenager, he would be working downtown in Memphis on the famous Beale Street with B.B. King's and all that stuff, and he'd kind of bring me down there and kind of shuffle me around and stuff while he was working or something and kind of hang out and play
did you
some
pay
guitar.
Attention to players back then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And I'd you know, play and sit in and stuff like that. And my brother was real proud of me. Probably my, you know, first fan, the first person who could tolerate listening to me. And he was real proud, so he'd always want to bring me around and sort of show off his little brother, I guess.
Do you remember the first time you played for people?
No, not necessarily. I mean, does that do your family count? I guess my
no separate
aunts
from
and
family.
Uncles separate like
from
like
family.
The public.
Like, yes, for the public.
Oh wow, it wasn't Friday, was it?
Yes.
I guess that was the first time in a long time.
Did you do bands when you were a teenager?
Not so much. Not any kind of like actual band that I think even came up with a name. Uh-huh. I think we might have tried to come up with a name, but that's what broke the band up.
So,
just playing around and stuff. And
what was the first band you were in?
The first band I was in, I think it was when I went to college, when I went to LSU.
Okay.
It was I was in a couple of terrible hippie jam bands, and kind of. That I wouldn't even mention, especially now that I said they were terrible.
They might be listening.
Sorry, Ron Lake. No, I'm just kidding around. They were great.
Awesome. I was at some of those gigs.
Yeah,
they weren't
Glenn
that good.
They weren't that good.
Who caught your ear when you were a kid? Guitar players.
Oh, who caught my ear?
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that teenagers get into is like as far as like popular music, you know, like from the Beatles to the Rolling Stones and Eric Clapton and stuff like that. But when I started getting serious about playing, it led really quickly into the things they might have listened to, which might have been especially got into like B.B. King and Charlie Christian and stuff like that. Some of the other, you know, not quite as radio kind of guitar players and stuff that don't have the big hits that you hear all the time. But those are the guys that those guys listen to, and that kind of became apparent really quick that was who I should get into.
Okay. Well, all you guys have, a lot of people in the area know you from the Red Stick Ramblers, the Pine Leaf Boys, Daniel playing.
Oh, yeah, that band.
Daniel playing with whoever out there. I mean, Dan, you've just been showing up, you know, in a lot of bands since I have known about your presence here.
It's because I'm easy to get along
with. That's right. So let's talk about how the Revelers.
So cheery.
Let's talk about how the Revelers came together. Who's going to tackle that one? How did this band come together?
I think we're all collectively pushing our chairs away from the microphones at this moment.
That, what's that about?
Well, we were put together by a record company.
Yeah. Right,
it was a boy band.
Certainly named by one.
You're a boy band.
Glenn is the bad boy. I think I'm the boy next door.
Yeah.
Eric is the athlete.
Yeah.
Cutting the grass is not an athletic competition.
Yeah.
Only once a month.
That's right.
We saw an ad looking for mid-30s musicians to join boy
you,
band.
You should
with
protest that.
That was my ad, actually.
Or that Blake said that was his ad.
Right.
That he
So I guess in all seriousness, sort of the Revelers sort of began.
Thank you, Eric.
Oh, you're welcome.
Somebody.
Well, there's kind of been a change of the guard in a lot of bands kind of recently in the last couple years or so. And Kevin Wimmer, who was in our band, the Red Stick Ramblers, for quite a long time, left the band to join the Miami Playboys with Steve Riley. So we immediately called up Daniel and Blake and said, hey, let's just, you know, make it a six-piece band. And, and you know, there was you know, never any downtime at all between the transition there. So with the Registered Gramblers, with all of us, with Blake and Daniel on board, we'd kind of already been rehearsing anyway, as the five of us just kind of, we didn't have a name or really even a set yet. We were just kind of writing and arranging songs.
Was there ever a conversation about musically where we want this band to go or what we want it to be, or has it just been a natural progression?
I kind of actually remember the first time we got together, and we were all like, well, do we want to do this? Do we want to do that? Yeah. What kind of thing do we want to do? And I think we all just kind of said, well, let's just get together and see kind of what sort of tunes we're writing, what kind of tunes we've been listening to, and kind of like make it work within the context of the instruments and our own collective minds.
Yeah.
I think kind of in a way we were certainly moving away to be a little less traditional, a little bit more kind of modern sounding versus, like, you know, I don't really know exactly how to say it, but, you know, definitely more electric sounding kind of than the Red Sticks were.
Okay.
You know, less folky, less, you know, focusing on, like, old folk music, more on, like, more modern dance hall kind of
material. But also really, too, what's coming out of all you guys originally. I mean, you guys are all writing songs.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's listen to, can we play the first one, should we do Cry For You?
Sure.
Is that one we can do?
Yeah, that's a song that Daniel Kulick wrote with a good friend of ours, Kelly Jones.
Ah, tell us about that song, Daniel.
Well, actually, this was, I believe, the first or second song we actually rehearsed at that first rehearsal ever. And, I wrote this song, actually, Chaz and Eric and I were at a wedding, and...
Not our collective wedding.
No. Yeah. And we were sitting at this wedding, and I made a comment that I'd rather not air
That's
fine. The collective audience in our collective brains. But anyway, and Chaz sort of made a comment back at me, and sort of like, I can't believe you said that, and and he was like, you never cry, you never, like, no, whatever. And so I kind of just went home, and I don't know, we were up somewhere, and I came back home, and I don't know, I just had this, I kind of had this idea for a hook in my head, and then I wrote the chorus, and then Kelly Jones came over, and we were rehearsing for something, and I was like, we need to, you know. She said, you've been writing, I showed her that, and then we kind of just finished it that day.
Okay.
And I was listening to a bunch of, like, Sam Cooke and soul music at the time, so it kind of somewhat had, I don't know.
Picked up some of that.
I guess, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
We should mention that this is Glenn Field singing the lead on this song.
Yeah, Glenn Field's killing.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And this is from a still in production, Revelers CD.
Yep,
we're getting to be released.
We're getting close.
Soon to be released. All right, let's listen to Cry For You.
Showered you in pearls, but you wanted diamond rings. Let you drink the finest wine, you wanted glasses of champagne. Had you opened your eyes, you find these eyes have cried. To be I found there's nothing in this world that you really want from me. Had you opened your eyes, you would find these eyes have cried for you. Now you say that I don't cry, but you see that I have eyes. These eyes have cried for you. Now you can look in all directions, try and find another who you think will cry for you. Who you think will cry for you.
All right, that was a cry for you, coming off the soon-to-be-released Reveler CD. That was written by Daniel Kulik, and that was Glenn Fields on the vocals. You know, there was a line in there, something that you said, Daniel, about there's, I don't know, there's so only so much I want from you or something. And Glenn, what we want more from you is singing.
Thanks, Cheryl.
I mean, that's got a great old shucks. Feel to it.
Yeah?
Huh?
Yeah, thanks. I hope so. I mean,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And, many words, me.
Well put, Daniel.
Blake, take the mic for a minute. So that Blake, that was you on accordion.
That was me on accordion.
And
taking my way through some Tejano kind of stuff.
It was great. Now, the style that you added into, Daniel, was there direction given to you, Blake, or did you? Was that just something you had a feel?
I mean, we were kind of been at the beginning of the band. We were kind of listening to the Texas Tornadoes and the like, and Sam Cooke and stuff. So, I mean, holding a triple, who else am I going to try to sound like? But, you know, especially something like that, and kind of a little Texas Tornado Flaco y Menez kind of thing.
And if people missed him this weekend at Festival, you missed something.
Incredible.
That was a great show. You did a nice job with that, Blake.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Now, Glenn,
ma'am.
Singing, how did it come? Because you're not, haven't been known for a singer in this area anyways.
No, I've never sang in a band before.
So how did it come about that you would take on this song?
Good question. I don't really remember. I don't. No, I know that.
I believe Daniel wrote the song and said he didn't want to sing it.
maybe
it was that simple.
Yeah,
I will.
Glenn was the first volunteer.
Yeah. I think I'm just at a point in my life, Cheryl, where I really don't care anymore.
that's a great place to be.
You know, it is a great place to be. And as I get older, I seem to care less and less about this sort of thing. And I've sang all my life in private. You know, just in the car or whatever in the shower.
He's a great whistler too. Yeah.
Thank you, Jazzy. And so, you know, I don't know. I figured I'd just go for it. Why not? And I think I was. They mentioned the Texas Tornadoes a little while ago, and there was a time, I guess, about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, where we were all listening to a lot of the Sir Douglas quintet. Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lot of Doug Somm, and I started. I've also been a struggling guitar player since high school, so I'm getting better, you know. Mm-hmm. But those records that Doug Somm made back then, I started kind of hearing the chord changes and figuring them out on guitar, and so I started just singing them around my house, and I would go over to Daniel's or Chaz's or whoever's and say, hey, check this song out. And they'd be like, yeah, that's great. It's got two chords. We're really proud of you. But I had a great time singing them, you know?
Yeah.
So I figured, why not?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, Glenn, to have a first song picked as your, you know, song to debut to the public, you sure picked a hard one.
Yeah.
And live, he plays drums and sings that too, which I don't see how he does. It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know.
You're a genius.
Yeah, that's true. It's true, Chazzy. Thank you I was trying to think of a more humble way of putting it. But
I mean, Lil Bob did it. You better watch out.
Yeah, that's true. There's and you know that you mentioned Lil Bob, but a lot of my favorite singers were drummers. You know,
Leave on help.
Yeah, Levon Helm, yeah. The great Levon Helm, Warren Storm, Clint West. You know, I don't know what
Phil
it
Collins.
Is. Yeah, and the great Don Henley. So, yeah, those are the last two words.
And I want to throw in Danny Kimball.
Danny Kimball, yeah.
I mean,
course,
in terms of a local
course.
Drummer who's also a lead singer.
I ran into Danny over at Scott's the other day, actually. Yeah.
At Scott's Drums.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, did the song, as the song has been recorded now, was there any major changes to it, or did it come out kind of sounding how you originally thought it would?
Oh, I don't really know if I had, and I mean, we used to play it a little bit slower. I mean, I kind of feel like it's kind of how we did it and how this band does it.
Yeah.
And
we ruined it.
No. definitely, I mean, I kind of look at it like a song breathes in various different forms, you know, like it could... If that's how the Revelers play it, and that's how the Revelers play it, and let's say if somebody else did it, and it can exist in different forms, I guess. And I definitely feel like I like how we do it, as long as people can dance to it, and sort of, and it, you know, and the idea of the song as.
Do you know that's a great one to sing to.
Oh yeah, well that's
you know
good.
I mean as you're listening to it that's one of the first things that I could see myself in a vehicle and singing.
Yeah, well that's, you know? That's awesome.
It's got a strong melody.
Yeah, it really does.
A lot of chords too.
Yeah, but for you guys that's not a big deal, right?
You'd be all surprised. Geniuses, yeah.
it's not a big deal for me.
I know how to play the chords. I just can't remember which one is where.
Oh, Chaz, you don't give yourself enough credit.
I really do forget the credit.
Let's move on to one of the... Now, Blake Miller, you wrote
Jolie Fleur de Bois, yep.
Oh, Fleur de Bois. Oh, okay. That's why I wasn't
Pretty
hearing it correctly.
Flower.
Let's talk about that song.
Well, this song, I got the idea from a couple old ballads. Talk about a flower in the wood that has, you know, ambiguous magical powers. And I just kind of thought that it was a cool thing because Fleur Dubois could actually be a girl's name.
Yeah.
So I kind of wrote a song around that whole idea, tying in old symbols from old ballads and putting them in a new song in a new situation.
When did you start writing?
2005, I guess.
You remember the year? Yeah.
Well, because me and Cedric and my cousin Jay, we went to St. Anne's Immersion.
Okay.
And we just kind of spent 5 weeks just doing nothing but playing together. And after 3 weeks, we kind of just started coming up with different things and trying our hand at being creative.
Do you write in French, the lyrics, initially? Is that how they come to you in French?
I find I can only write in French.
Ah. That's interesting. That's good.
I'm working on getting better in writing in English, but so far it's very limited.
You know, I mean, most of the since you have started playing, the majority of the music you have played has been all French-based.
Yeah, up until now.
Yeah.
It has only been French music.
But, you know, I mean, that's what's nice about in this area that you have a band like this where and you can mix it up, you know, language-wise, you know. Well, let's listen to that, and we're going to talk about it afterwards. This is Jolie Fleur de Bois.
Very nice.
And it's Blake Miller.
Y'a rien que vous
was Jolie Fleur du Bois. That was The Revelers, and that was written by Blake Mill. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. And I do want to mention, I didn't mention it at the beginning, but hats off to all the organizers, all the volunteers, everybody with Festival International. It was an incredible weekend here in downtown Lafayette for the festival. And great bands, great art, great food, everything. So thanks to everybody who had something to do with that.
We're a very lucky town.
Oh, it that's, you know, this year is the most fun I've ever that I've had at festival. Yeah. And it wasn't just because of the mood I was in. It was just, you know, I mean, it's a great festival. And it keeps getting better and better every year.
Absolutely.
You know? So, and for KRVS, for it, because I will say, I had to work part on Saturday, and it was nice to be able to listen to part of the festival at work before I got down there in the afternoon. All right, Blake, let's talk about this song that we just heard. You, have you sang lead much in other bands you were in? Have you been like a...
No, not so much.
He was an amazing lead singer, which he will not really mention on air, but he was an amazing lead singer in Philippe Bilodeau's Pepper Jack Shrimp Playboys.
That's right, yeah. I was playing second to Chris Stafford in that band.
I never got to see that.
Make it to Prejean for Tuesday.
I never got to see that band.
We were quite famous. I'm surprised you missed us.
I did. That's a great name, though, for a band.
Yeah.
Once a week, every week at Prejean's. Tuesday night, folks.
Still?
Any band named after an appetizer.
Not anymore.
Oh, it was named after an advertiser. No, you guys.
That's an entree.
I hope this doesn't, you know, put a bad, you know, whatever on this CD before it's out. But so far, it's like this. It's really fun, happy. Sounding music.
Yeah, the rest of it's so dark and depressing. It's all murder ballads.
Yeah, that's right. But that was a great song, Blake.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I really
you.
Like that. Is it something that, do you write, of course you said it's been hard for you to write English lyrics thus far. Have you written, though, different styles of music from outside of here? You know, with like, even if it was with French lyrics or just instrumentals, have you written other styles of music?
No.
No, this is
so
just kind of where you're starting out.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Still at home base.
This is what?
I'm still at home base.
You're still at home base.
But I like home base. It's nice.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good place to be. Who are we going to do next here? Eric.
Yes, ma'am?
Yeah. Now, you started writing songs. We're not going to hear when you wrote today. But.
No, not today. I do have an original song on the record, but we're still working on mixing it, and I don't know. I don't know that it's so radio friendly, anyhow.
But is writing something you've been doing for?
Oh,
a while?
I've written songs for a long time.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm still working on getting good at it, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I started writing songs, I guess, when I was in high school in rock and roll bands and stuff, but you know, it's so funny because I actually have recordings of those, and you go back and listen to them, and you know, what you thought was really good at the time and so clever and awesome. You know, at the time, you know, I guess I thought I was writing something really good. And then to go back and listen to it 15 years later, it's kind of, you know, it's laughable, of course. But, you know, I still applaud the fact I was trying.
Exactly.
That young, you know.
You know, and to see the progression. And I still think sometimes you go back and you pull things from that.
Right.
You know, there's something that caught your ear that, you know.
I think the thing for me is mainly that I was... At the time, I was trying to write about experiences that I just didn't have.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So.
And now that's all come to, you know, that
right.
continues to come together.
Yeah, and with experience, you learn just not to write about those things.
That's right.
Nobody really wants to hear that.
Some things are better left
that's
unsaid.
That's right. So everybody in this band writes.
That's correct.
Yeah. Some of these songs, did you write together? Are there any songs where people got together and
Not yet.
Ah. But you all do arranging together. I mean, is it kind of a free band to throw arranging ideas into the mix?
Yeah.
That's
okay.
That's one of my favorite things about playing with my friends is that it's, you know, sometimes we argue about it, but as we, you know each other longer and longer and longer, we're actually opening up to each other's ideas and the way they do things. And Daniel, well, you know, all of them actually, we'll write... sometimes we'll put things in a song specifically for the other person. You know what I mean? Like, this would be a great thing for such and such to, you know, to do
We're getting more and more motivated to try writing together. You know, yeah. Like we've set up little writing dates with each other. It's cute. Show up with flowers.
Like a play date.
We haven't got motivated right. enough to actually do it.
Do it. No, yeah, no, not yet. No, no, no. That'll, yeah, it'll come. Yeah. Don't rush
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because there's an art to that.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it's more about jealousy when it comes to publishing, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I tell you, there's an art of actually getting along with someone for the last 10 years.
Right.
You know,
that's
like,
right.
Chaz and I can't remember actually how long we've been playing music
together.
I
thought you were going to say, I can't remember having an argument.
No. Well, yeah. That too, buddy.
And that would
that
be
too.
Wrong.
Yeah, no.
If
well,
you said
it was
that.
Yesterday. On the way over here, actually. No, I think Chaz and I have been playing together probably 12 or 13 years now, I
yeah.
think.
It's, well, at least. Well, yeah. I guess we started the Red Stick Ramblers together.
Right.
So. Now, how did the two of you meet initially?
Oh, God.
Wait, this was in Baton Rouge?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a long story. We sort of lived in the same area and played in the same music scene.
Okay.
And I was in a band with Joel Savoy and Richard Burgess, who are two people that live in this area now, who are great musicians. And Chaz would come and sit in.
Josh Caffrey,
and Josh right? Of course, okay. Can't forget Caff. And Chaz would come and sit in, and that's how I met Chaz. And then Chaz and Joel started playing. Like I guess Django stuff together or jazz tunes or whatever, just kind of jamming, and then they invited me over to hang out one night, and the band just sort of happened, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, it seems like a million years ago now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was Lindsey Young was living with Joel as well, and he would actually usually cook and we would play, and then he started playing more.
Yeah.
And,
some things never change.
Evolved from there, yeah. Some things never change.
And you know, speaking of cooking, Blake, that's something I missed out on your history. I mean, you're quite the cook, like a ribbon winning.
I am.
Oh wait,
a black pot winning.
Together with my good buddy Daniel Kulik here, we are a two-time.
Oh, and Daniel, I didn't know that.
Two-time first prize winning gratons at the Black Pot Festival.
It's not just Blake.
Wow.
It takes two people to fry.
Yeah.
We have to double fry them, you see. Yeah.
Now, I want to know how you started that doing that.
Well, I grew up in a family of really great cooks.
Your father.
My father, as well as my mother, as well as my grandmother.
Oh, your dad won the first Black Pot.
He did,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, as a...
His cousin won the last one, too.
Yeah, and the most recent winner is, that's right, Miller's been taking over.
Wow.
So I never really started cooking anything until I kind of moved out the house, just because why in the world would I want to?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I kind of started, missing home and not being able to go to IOTA every day.
Yeah.
Wanting a sausage gravy. Yeah.
Do you cook that kind of stuff now? I mean, do you cook meals for yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And for my friends as often as possible.
Okay. How about you, Daniel? I mean, is cooking something that is an interest of yours, or just doing this contest?
Just competitive cooking.
Yeah. Daniel doesn't do anything if it's not competing against someone else.
He cooked to win.
That's right.
For money. For money. For money and prestige and ribbons.
Yeah.
And little seasoning packets.
Yeah. Okay.
I've always enjoyed. I mean, I think we all actually cook pretty well, and actually Glenn and Eric and myself have a little barbecue that we do that we've done for a couple boucheries now.
Okay.
We had the honor of cooking for Mr. Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did that
for
one.
On reservations.
And we just did the Folk Roots.
And we just did
the Folk Roots Boucherie two Saturdays ago, I believe.
Well, and let's talk about, did it from, besides Anthony Bourdain, you guys have gotten involved with the show Treme.
Yeah.
And now as reappearing mm-hmm. folks on Treme.
Yeah, I think it started from the Anthony Bourdain episode. There was this guy that kept coming over to the barbecue pit and trying to eat stuff before it was time to take it off, and you know, I was just standing over the barbecue, so I'd be like, oh sure, buddy, here you go, have some, you know, whatever. And he was hanging around with Daniel, and Daniel mentioned that, and I hope this is okay, Dee, but Daniel mentioned that his family...
Stop. No, I'm just kidding.
His family, is it your mom's side or your dad's side that has the barbecue
restaurants?
Oh,
yeah, it's my mom. I think it was my mom's cousins. My mom's cousins have a barbecue.
They were like the only Jewish barbecue restaurant
all right.
in Atlanta, you know? So this guy just happened to be David Simon, who is the executive producer of No Reservations and the head writer and executive producer of Treme. And I guess he took a liking to us, and we got a phone call one day asking if we would want to be on the show. And, of course, we said, absolutely, that'd be awesome. And then the next thing you know, they asked us to be recurring characters.
So for this season, you're...
Yeah, for season three.
Wow. Right.
Yeah.
Which supposedly airs in the fall.
Right,
at some point.
October.
Who are you?
We can't really say.
You can't say.
We are ourselves.
Yeah. Pretty much.
You just have to wait and find out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Tune in.
But you have character names, or are you going by...
No, my
character name is Glenn.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was hard to remember, but...
My character's name is Bass Player.
That's right.
and you're playing on the show?
Yeah, we're playing, and there's a little bit of acting involved.
Do they coach you, or
they try to. they try really hard.
Only the ones of us that can be coached.
Lord. Right? Yeah. We're not known for being we are known for being stubborn and hard headed when it comes to just about everything. So try as they may, we sort of whether they like it or not, our own real life personalities end up spilling onto the screen.
If you're familiar at all with Treme, you can probably figure out what our role in the show is.
Or might be.
Yeah.
Or tune in.
Or just watch season three.
And see what happens.
Yeah. I play a private detective, that's right.
Well, we're going to listen to, and this might be a case you worked on where this song came from, Kidnapper. We're going to listen to that.
Wow. Cheryl, no wonder.
Pretty good.
This is why
you
got
a radio show.
Pretty good.
That's why I don't have a radio
show. This came out of Detective Glenn.
Think on your feet.
Kidnapper. Tell us about that song.
Speaking of private detectives, yes. Well, okay. I guess the first time I heard this song was on AM 960 The Gator, a few years back or whatever. Didn't know who it was or whatever, and I had to find the telephone number for them, which was kind of hard to do. And I called, and I believe it was on a Saturday, and I actually got somebody on the phone, and they told me who it was. It was Jewel and the Rubies. So I immediately went out and asked Glenn, who was like, of course it's Jewel and the Rubies. You don't know that? And then he gave me a bootleg kind of compilation of something with it on there, and I think I first learned the song while it was playing on the radio because I had to know how it went. I think I had a banjo laying around, so I just figured out the chords on the banjo and wrote down the words really quick and started singing and playing it at jams and stuff.
And you're singing on this song?
Yeah, I sing the lead on, but it's Chaz and Glenn and I kind of sing the whole thing together, sort of, in three-part harmony. And our good buddy, the Chris Miller, is playing the saxophones on it. We shipped the recording up to New York, and he shipped it back with beautiful sax work on it.
Cool. All right. Well, let's listen to this from the soon-to-be-released Revelers CD, Kidnapper.
Bring my baby back to me. me.
That was the song Kidnapper, from, like I said, from the soon-to-be-released Revelers CD. That was Eric Fry on lead with that.
Lead.
Good job, Eric.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys, it. I mean, that continued, that's another great song. Do you have a time frame at all for when this will be released?
We try and get it out for the summer if we can.
Yeah.
That's our, you know, kind of our goal. But
okay.
You know, we've already, with the Ramblers kind of slowing down, and then, you know, we don't have the CD out yet. The Revelers gigs that we're doing this summer are not few and far between, but they're just not like very, we're not doing any festivals, you know what I mean? So we'd like to get it out, to have it, and to get it to friends and family that have already helped us put this together, get to where we are now. So as soon as possible.
Okay, yeah. And I do want to mention, you can get away on the 10th of this month. The Revelers will be at the Blue Moon here in downtown Lafayette.
Yes, we will.
So go check. You'll be playing some of these songs, I'm assuming?
No. Oh, yes, we're going to be playing all of those songs more.
We usually just jam.
We just play.
Somebody play a G, something in G.
Yeah, we just kind of funk and E.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, because before we go out, we're going to talk to Chaz a little bit about a song that he wrote, and we're going to hear that one going out. But I appreciate you guys coming on today.
Oh, we appreciate you.
And get on, just get on the internet, Google, search the Revelers. There'll be all kinds of cool things that come up about how to get the CD, how to help the band, whatever.
Yeah.
Chaz.
Yes.
Before we talk about your song, I want to thank Glenn Fields, Blake Miller, Eric Fry, Daniel Kulik, and now we're going to talk to Chaz Justice.
Right.
So the final song we're going to go out on is If You Ain't Got Love.
That's right.
You got it, buddy?
I think so.
Right now,
I'm feeling the love.
Tell me a little bit about that song.
There's not too much to tell.
You
love
wrote it?
Is a good thing, yes.
You sing it?
I do. I did write it, and I do sing it. And it was sort of written for this band as a song that would fit with what we do. And I think it probably reflects that. Just the sound to have in your head, you know, a lot of times sort of write to sort of tailor write and stuff, and just whatever happens to be going through my head, which might have been a rehearsal that day or something, kind of comes out in a song that would maybe fit and be something that we would do.
All right. Well, everybody have a good week. Next week, Connie Castile will be on the show, filmmaker Connie Castile. And check out the Revelers. We're going to go out on If You Ain't Got Love by Chaz Justice.
Oh. Thank you, Cheryl.
Yeah,
thank
you guys. Woo!
You can't hear the birdies sing. can live it up, you can hit the town, you can be the biggest playboy around, but you ain't nothing when the lights go down.